Hello, this is David Brim, and I'm the founder of Orlando Entrepreneurs. We are the hub for Orlando entrepreneurship, and our mission is to connect, cultivate, and celebrate our local entrepreneurs. We bring together our local entrepreneurial ecosystem to help impact our entrepreneurs, their companies, and our local economy. Learn more at OrlandoEntrepreneurs.org. Now over to Josh Wilson to get forward with our show.
Good day, everyone, and welcome to the Orlando Entrepreneur Show. My name is Josh, and I'm actually having a conversation with another Josh here in Orlando. This is Josh Elledge, and he started and founded a company called Savings Angel, which you probably have heard of, and he is a serial entrepreneur running multiple companies, and we're going to dive into that, but just want to welcome you guys to the show. So, Josh, welcome to the Orlando Entrepreneur Show.
Thanks, Josh.
Yeah, this is gonna be a lot of Joshes going around here. But Josh, why don't you tell us a little bit about who you are and what you do?
Yeah, so originally from West Michigan, I joined the U.S. Navy for 5 years as a Navy journalist. Had a great time there. From there, actually studied family therapy because my dream job was to become a love doctor. I had some experience in the Navy and being on radio, and I just fell in love with it. And at the same time, I was reading books like Men Are From Mars, Women Are From Venus, and stuff like that. And I thought, man, I can help people with their relationships. I'm good at that. I love listening to people's problems. And so along the way, however, I got distracted with the internet. And so I started doing internet development. And then, of course, that led to a short time career in corporate America, and then eventually starting all my own businesses, launched a series of businesses that either failed or in a couple of cases failed spectacularly. And then eventually 11 years ago, I launched Savings Angel, my seventh business venture, and it actually did very well. So we've done more than $7 million in revenue now. And along the way, and that's where, you know, if someone's listening to this and they live here in Central Florida, I've been on TV over 600 times alone in support of Savings Angel. So I'm known as the guy who can get you a deal, hookup, or upgrade on anything in life. And so I write a syndicated newspaper column. I do syndicated TV. All told, I've been in the media over 2,000 times, teaching consumers how to save money and be smarter with their money. And so that experience led me to do a lot of pro bono work in our local startup scene. So I've done some work with SBDC, Starter Studio, just finding ways to volunteer, mentor, and help people. And my specialty was the fact that when I launched Savings Angel, I had no money, but I knew that exposure was everything. And if I didn't get exposure, I wouldn't be in business very long. And that's the same thing for any business. Exposure gives you people, obviously, to put into the top of your sales funnel, but it also gives you data. Like, when we launch a company, we have no idea if that is truly what's going to work. So we have to validate our ideas. And in a lot of cases, you kind of have to do it in a real world scenario. And just know that you're going to modify, tweak your product service in those first couple of years. And so we did that with Savings Angel. And so for my visibility, where I didn't have money to pay for advertising, I did have, I guess, some guts to just start approaching local media and say, well, look, I'd love to advertise, but I don't have any money, but maybe I could do this. Maybe I could serve. Maybe I could bring some value. And so we actually came up with segment ideas. We were able to talk newspapers into letting me write for them. And that's how we did it. So my mentoring that I've done here locally has always been around how to increase your visibility, how to work with media, how to work with influencers, how and why to build your authority, and then, very important, how to use that influence and authority and really grow your business so you become very profitable.
Wow. So in the Navy, You were a journalist.
Mm-hmm. I wasn't a very good one, I should tell you. I really was not. I was, you know, it's like I liked it. It was fun, but it was, no, I was not good at it. So that I want to give anyone else hope, like, okay, this guy's been in the media a bunch of times. I can never do what he does. No, you can. I really was terrible. We were just talking before this about, you know, if you want to go into podcasting, but you feel self-conscious, like you know you're not going to do a very good job, just pick almost any podcast and go listen to their first few podcasts and you'll feel really, really good about yourself.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Because, I mean, you got to start somewhere, and a lot of people are afraid to just get started because of how it might begin. But so you actually started in the Navy and you read a few books and you were actually going down the direction of being the love doctor.
Yeah.
What happened there? Did you become the love doctor?
So toward the end of my time in the Navy, actually just before I left Hawaii, I met the woman who would become the girl, who would become my wife. And so this is a good story. So we actually met at a luau. And instantly, just chemistry, just had it. And we spent every single day together. And in 18 days of knowing one another, I actually proposed to her.
And what? Whoa.
Yeah.
You met a girl.
Yeah.
And within 18 days.
Yeah. I said, I knew she was the one. I knew that, and I don't believe in that concept of the one, but I didn't want to lose her because I knew she was really, really special. And so we were engaged for a year because I still had 1 year left in the Navy. But yeah, so we both went to school together to study family therapy. And she's actually now a very successful family therapist. And for me, I just goof around on the internet all day.
Very cool. What did she say when you asked her?
Oh, she was in. She was all in. I mean, she's 19. I was 21 at the time. You know, I have a 19-year-old daughter now, so.
You're like, please don't.
Right. Don't go to Hawaii.
Yeah. Stay away from luau's in Hawaii.
Yeah. Which is funny because right now, as we're speaking, she's actually in France. And so,
No.
Yeah.
Well, awesome. Okay, so you got out of the Navy. You guys were engaged for a year. You're going kind of down this route of being the love doctor, which I love that title. I think from now on I'm going to call you love doctor. But what happened? Like, how did you transition or pivot into technology and the internet?
Yeah, you know, so I started looking for – well, so what had happened was my professors – all wanted an internet website. And so I knew how to do that. I could, you know, build, you know, with HTML, you know, HTML2 at the time. I mean, this is, you know, back even before really good WYSIWYG editors. So the professors would all give me internship and research credit for just designing websites for them. So that's a good deal. I maxed out on every research and internship credit I could get. And by the time I was done, I knew more about internet development. And at the time, I could go and continue to get my master's like my wife, and I could earn less than what I could earn right now if I just went out corporate America, started working in internet development at the time. So that was it. Now, I will tell you that I had a really good conversation with an older gentleman who was one of Chicago's top heart surgeons and very, very successful in life. And I remember asking him, and I said, I want to help people because I feel like that's what God wants for me. But I'm also kind of getting pulled into doing internet development. And, you know, that I don't know if that really feels like a real God thing to do. And, you know, he just looked at me, he put his hand on my shoulder, and he said, listen, Josh, God can use you no matter what you do. And I want to let you know that, you know, God can use you to do amazing stuff, through the internet. And it's true. We through Savings Angel, we've easily facilitated over $10 million in giving over the years. And we do that because our whole philosophy is to end lack and scarcity in our local communities, because you buy more than you need. We teach people, you know, we don't do this anymore. We shut down our membership portion of it. But, you know, we would encourage people to, you know, look, if we give you this coupon and then you take it into Publix and you can now get Cheerios for 25 cents a box, and it's normally over $4 a box, how many do you think you should buy? And, you know, some people will say two, some people will say six. And I tell them, I think you should buy more than you need, and then you donate whatever you don't use. And so that's what we've been teaching for the past 11 years is give of your abundance. And if you don't have abundance, let's show you how to easily gain some abundance.
Wow. So give of your abundance, but if you don't have abundance, we'll show you how to create abundance.
Yep, that was our whole mission behind what we did. You know, and similarly now with Up My Influence, you know, we turn thoughtful entrepreneurs into media celebrities. Why is that important? I fundamentally believe that every person has a message that can positively impact the world. And if I don't act, and if I don't help, and that business owner right now that could have the same impact on feeding, you know, those who are starving right now, but yet they can't do it because their business is not yet at the level of success that it needs to be. You know, if I don't help them, then I have failed. If I let them fail, because I know a lot of business owners go out of business pretty quickly because they just don't get that visibility that you need so that you can develop and redevelop, and also so you can have customers.
Yeah, absolutely. How did you come up with, so I do want to touch both businesses, but yeah. You said you had six failures prior to Savings Angels.
Yeah.
Let's talk about some of those.
Sure.
Let's have some fun. You know, you talked to a professor, a very successful guy, and he said, you know, you could be used and you could create an impact through the internet.
Yeah.
So he said, okay. Like, talk to us about, you know, maybe a high-level overview of some of the failures that you had to get through.
Yeah, you know, I'd say one of the biggest ones is that I had actually started a blog before there were such things as blogs. I just started kind of focusing on the things that were going on in my local community. And so I started going to all the city council meetings, and then I'd kind of type up what was going on. I used my irreverent sense of humor along with that, and then I thought, well, you know, one thing I couldn't get, though, was advertisers. I found that advertisers were not interested in advertising on the internet at the time. They were or if they were, it was just like chicken feed. I mean, it was really, really little what we could get. And so I thought, well, wait a minute, if I were a newspaper, that would be more legitimate and I could charge a lot more money. And it's true. And so I started a small town newspaper, which is a horrible business to start. And the problem that I ran into was that I was afraid to sell, because I had a hang up in my head. I thought, well, selling is trying to convince people of something. And that's what my belief of selling was. And so because of that, I would avoid selling at all costs. I would hire it out. They would do terrible, or they would steal from me, which that happened. But it was just a very, very painful thing. So I would just avoid it. So naturally, as a result, you know, that led to bankruptcy, foreclosure, and all the other horrible things, and restarting. And so from there, my next venture that I did, I actually worked as an independent contractor doing sales and marketing. And so I did that for 5 years, and I ended up, you know, being one of the top 0.1% of the company in terms of sales and marketing.
Wow.
And through that journey, I really, really got comfortable with it, because I knew that it's not about convincing people about things. It's about helping. It's about serving. Sometimes your product or service, you know, solves their problem. Sometimes it doesn't. And you have to be okay with that, because it's, you know, it's a numbers game. But at the same time, the more value I can bring, the better I think I'm doing my job.
So you had a fundamental shift in your thoughts about what selling really is. And prior to that, like the, you know, you said bankruptcy, foreclosure, you know, you went through I'm sure that was very difficult.
Yeah.
But through that, on the other side of that, you said, you know what, it's not bad to sell. Like, selling is actually good. It's service. It's helping.
Yeah, listen, if we're not doing selling, nothing is getting done in the world. I mean, the economy would grind to a halt. I mean, that's what the economy's built on is, you know, we're recording this and it's holiday season right now. And, you know, marketing is all around us. And some people say they don't like it. They do. That's a lie. We love being marketed to. We don't like when it's in your face and it's, you know, the used car salesman kind of stuff, but we like to be informed. We like to be inspired. We like to be educated. I like to know, is this a product or service that's going to make my life better? So last night I bought the new Apple Watch 4 and I've been trying to find out, is this going to make my life better than the Apple Watch 1? And so it's really interesting. So I've been through, I've done some speaking with the Tony Robbins organization, and I've been through his business sales training, and he talks a lot about emotional reasons for buying now and logical reasons for buying now. So urban and lurban. So emotional reasons for buying now, that's basically like 98% of it, really. So emotionally, I had reasons for wanting to get the new Apple Watch. You know, our business just got funding, like we're doing well financially. We've had, you know, we've had some times where we've had to really invest in our business, which has meant that there hasn't been as much money for my family and I, because we've really been doubling down on, say, on up my influence over the past few years. So we're doing pretty well right now. And I didn't have anything else on the Christmas list that I was really looking for. So you could see like all these emotional justifications, right?
Yeah.
You know, it has a few new features, but you know, here's where I get into the logical reasons, right? So logically, there's not a lot of difference between the 4 and even the 1, in my opinion. Yes, it's a better display. The battery life lasts 3 times as long. I have had it go dead on me. So it's like, you know, so I just start listing all these logical things just to justify what I've already decided. Yeah. And so that's a really good clue. So when you're trying to move your business ahead, what are the emotional reasons that people want your product? And really focus on that. And then give them the data so they can back it up. So for us, you know, we ask people, you know, Tony Robbins will talk about like the 6 basic needs that people want. One of those is significance. And so for us, we've learned that our target audience is doing okay in business, but maybe they're not being celebrated like they should. Like they don't have respect in their industry, and they go to conferences and they're just sitting in the crowd. And they're like, wait a minute, you guys are making $500,000 a year. You should be the one on stage because people want to learn from you. And so, you know, how do you get there? Well, you got to build up your indicators of authority, do some local media, do some industry media, you know, start putting yourself in a position where you can now serve audiences or be a spokesperson for your industry. And you'll find that good things will naturally grow from that. Hmm. You'll get those emotional feelings of being validated and liked. And that's what we provide. So we really, and I'll ask questions like, you know, have you ever been in the media and you share that on Facebook? You know, what do people do? And they're like, oh my gosh, like everyone jumps in like, oh my gosh, that's so awesome. You were on TV, you know, and it feels really good. It's like, imagine if you were to do that on a regular basis, or we could, the question I love asking is, what would your life be like if you had 10 times the authority than you currently have? So what would your sales cycles be like? What would your inbound leads be like? What would your revenue be like? You know, how would people treat you? How would your family treat you, your spouse or your loved one? What would they think of you if you had 10 times the authority in your industry? And I say, that's our job. Our job is to help you get that. So, you know, if I take them through that exercise, man, they're coming up with a lot of emotional reasons for, look, I don't know how we engage Josh. I don't even know what your products and services are, but I really love what you're talking about. And then we'll say, well, you know, let's look at some different ways that we could help you. And it just so happens that our services happen to be like 1/5 of the price of what normal PR firms are charged. We don't even call ourselves PR. Yeah. I think that's an outdated term.
So I'm looking through, you know, as I'm writing my notes, your seventh business really mm-hmm. started taking off. You got some funding. You've helped create $10 million in giving to end scarcity and lack in communities. You've been on TV 600 times, 2,000 times in the media.
Yeah.
So you kind of cracked this code for yourself because you started Savings Angel with nothing, you said, mm-hmm. Very little money. And then you guys got this huge exposure. Now you guys are doing really well. So why did you start Up My Influence? Like, talk to us about creating the second one.
Well, and it was quite by accident, simply because I had received some benefit from SBDC here, Small Business Development Center here, which is a great organization. They offer fantastic training, support. You can get mentoring. Their job is to increase the economy in Central Florida. And I was part of, I had received some benefit and I said, look, I'd love to help as well. So I just started mentoring, started sharing with people kind of the success that I had in working with the media. And I had a lot of people kind of like, well, you need to create a course or something. Cause 5 years ago, courses were all the rage. So I'm like, really? And they're like, yeah, people will buy it. And it was interesting. So I did develop a course. It didn't sell particularly well because what I found is that the people with budget didn't want to learn how to do it. And the people who didn't have budget, well, they wanted to learn how to do it, but they didn't want to pay for it. And so what I found, however, is that people would buy the course, and they did, if my personal time came along with it. And so people kept wanting to buy access to me so that I could personally solve their problem. And so, and along with that, they would ask me, well, how do I do this? And I'd say, well, here's how we did it, but it's a lot of work. Maybe we could do that for you. And so all of this is just very organic, very natural. And so we kind of developed an agency, and now that agency is, fairly platformized. And our price points, like I said, we have clients that pay us a couple hundred dollars a month, and we're able to help boost them in certain areas. And then, we work with SMBs, but we have a bunch of Inc. 500 companies as well.
Nice.
Because we specialize on doing some very, very specific things. We're not a full service PR agency, but boy, when someone says, I want media, we're very, very good at that. If they say, I want to do lead gen on LinkedIn, which, we've kind of expanded into a couple of things that we've gotten really, really good at. We do that. Influencer engagement is another one that we do a lot of that work on. And in fact, it's really interesting. We used to have a different name for the company, which included the word PR. And we found that PR is a really loaded term. And so we don't really use that term anymore. We will if somebody says, well, do you do PR? And I said, well, why don't you tell me what you're looking for? And then I'll answer that. Because it's usually most people don't want PR. PR is that thing that you think you're supposed to do. But what we really want is we want buzz. We want people talking about us. We want sales. We want revenue. We want to be known. We want we want to be respected, and that's what we deliver. And we've kind of condensed that down into we find that influence is the best word to encapsulate all of that.
So what does it look like for you? You mentioned influencer engagement and indicators of authority.
Yeah.
Will you break those two things down for us?
Right. So influencer engagement. So when we talk about authority, authority comes from two places today. It comes from your social proof. Does it look like a lot of people pay attention to what you have to say? And largely that's going to be, if you have good social media followers and good engagement there, that can pretty much check that box. And then the second part of gaining that authority are your associations. And who do I see you associating with? And so if people find out that I speak at Social Media Marketing World and that I was invited by the Tony Robbins organization to speak to his audience, those are really good indicators of authority. Those things didn't happen overnight. People find out that I'm often in the media and they can see evidence of that. That didn't happen overnight. And we've had to work very hard in order to get that. But now that we have that, it's like when you have a lot of authority, like, you're just luckier in business. Just stuff just happens. And you just don't have to work as hard. Your sales funnels don't have to be as amazing. Your advertising, you don't have to spend as much on advertising because people like you already. They know, like, and trust you. And so influencer engagement is really all about building those associations. And so a lot of times we're really just giving our clients the confidence and the best practices so that they can reach out and do it themselves. And the best way to do influencer engagement is to be an influencer yourself. So we really try to help our clients lead with their authority. If they don't feel like they have much, then we'll help them get some authority. Then making those connections and doing joint ventures together and collaborating together with other influencers, it just happens naturally. The other question you asked about was, you said influencer engagement.
And indications of authority.
Indicators of authority. Okay. So this is really, really important. And this is an important person for the person, you know, for the person who's listening to this conversation, understand how sales get done today. And granted, you know, I'm a philosopher in some ways in this regard. I have my point of view and I'm going to advocate very strongly for it. Meanwhile, there are other people that might advocate for something else. But I believe that, and I've got evidence to support it, that when someone is deciding whether or not to engage with you, say they get an email from you and you're asking them to do a partnership together or jump on the phone together so we can discuss possibly working together, they are going to do one of four things. They're either going to respond to you right away, they're going to, they're too busy, they'll respond to you later, and then they do. They intend to respond to you later and then they forget, or they just delete you. And when they just delete, it very seldom is someone going to respond to you and say, no, we're too busy. We guard our personal time, and even responding and saying no for a lot of people, they're not worth my time. Now, if I respect you, but I can't do it, then I'll respond and say, I'm sorry, I can't do it. But generally, like, if you're reaching out and trying to establish contact with someone new, you know, they don't owe you anything. So they're not going to tell you why, but I will tell you in most cases why they don't respond to you, assuming your pitch is otherwise good. And by the way, the same thing goes for sales. Like, if your offer comes in front of me, I'm going to look for a few things. And those things generally boil down to, is this somebody that deserves my respect? Do they have social proof? Because if they have social proof, then I don't want to look like a fool and get left behind, because maybe this is something I should be paying attention to. So I will look at your social media, try to figure out, are you a known commodity? And do other people follow you? And if so, I should pay attention. So if you don't have that, then I'm not saying it's going to rule you out, but it doesn't help you. So there's that. Then there are some, you know, things like looking at your branding on your website. So if you have a crappy page, a crappy website, I'm sorry, but you're going to be judged mercilessly on that. Is all of this superficial? Yeah, absolutely. But it's really interesting when you ask people, are you a really good judge of character? Everyone says yes. No one says, nope, not me. Yeah. You know, I'm a fool. Yeah. Nobody says no to that. Everyone feels like we have this almost superhuman ability to sort people very, very quickly. We do that when we watch reality TV shows and we instantly pick our favorites that we want to root for. Well, how do we do that? You know, producers know that. So they script it in a way that you're gonna like certain characters and you're gonna root for them. And so all of this, by the way, can be learned. We have clients that are attorneys and they're not very likable at first. We can work with them and help them to become more likable because it really, really matters. Yeah. This, your authority is the currency that is going to drive sales unlike anything else over the next 5 years. And the reason why is because there's more noise than there has ever been in the history of marketing. The American Marketing Association says that we're exposed up to, like 100,000 marketing messages daily. I mean, we're just surrounded with marketing messages. So how do you break through the noise? Well, again, can you solve my problem? Are you solving other people's problems? And, you know, successful for them? And if so, it'll probably be successful for us. And so, yes, I would like to give you money so you can make my life better.
This is so good. When working with Up My Influence, the business that you're building and growing and scaling, what kind of people are you really looking for? You mentioned, you know, attorneys and small SMBs, small to medium-sized businesses. Who's like your favorite kind of people to work with?
Well, we like companies, obviously, that they're growth-focused, and they believe in investing in that growth. Because the reality is that if you're trying to build a business and you're doing everything else, so I'm speaking to the solopreneur right now, and you know, everything you do is just trying to see what you can get for free. You're watching a lot of YouTube videos, watching a lot of podcasts. Look, you should be doing that. However, you really can't, and maybe you're not ready for this phase yet. But at some point when you want to really start growing, I'm going to tell you that really the only way to do that is you're going to have to just make investments. There's no other way around, because there's only so much that you can do. And, you know, you can rely on the good help of other people, you know, to help you pro bono. And we do a lot of pro bono stuff. And again, take advantage of that stuff. But just know that if you want the really, really good stuff, my team just needs to get paid to do that work. We're a business as well. And so when I can get my team to work and we can actually do services for your business, well, you're going to start to experience a lot of things that, you know, the audience that likes me and they love our social media feed and, you know, they love listening to me on podcasts and, you know, watching my free video training. That's great, but they're not growing very quickly. They're developing a lot of great stuff in their head. But, you know, we even took on some funding recently. We're very profitable as a company, but we're not crazy profitable like other agencies that, you know, have this like 80% profit margin off their clients. We don't really work like that. You know, we're in the blue ocean in terms of our services. We want to make sure that it's value-based for our clients. So as a result, we have decent profit. But in order for us to go to that next level, that money needs to, you know, for me to hire new salespeople, invest in marketing, invest in some other things that we've been wanting to do, you know, do some more, have a greater presence at shows, trade shows and conferences, you know, all that stuff just requires money. Where's that money going to come from? Well, it either comes from my pocket. And so I could tell my wife, well, you know, I'm sorry, but, you know, we're going to have to not pay the mortgage and all these other bills this month. I'm not going to do that. So once you have a track record, you've got some success, it's really easy to get funding. And you could get funding through the SBA. You get lines of credit, and they're very, very fair. Be careful of alternative lenders. But, you know, the SBA is amazing. SBA, I got an SBA loan. You know, got $75,000. Basically, that's just going to cover 6 months of salesperson, bunch of other stuff. That is the smartest money I could possibly spend, because that salesperson needs to outperform what I pay them. And I expect that they'll be doing that within a couple of months. And so does it make sense for me to hire a salesperson? Yeah, absolutely, because I don't want to have to do all the selling forever. Does it make sense for me to invest in a conference and have a booth there? Yeah, absolutely, because if I give them $3,000 to $4,000, I will almost certainly get, you know, $20,000 in new business from that. Still, you still need to come up with that $3,000 to $4,000. So I'm illustrating a struggle for the solopreneur who's listening to us, and they know exactly what I'm talking about. Cash flow is a major issue that we don't talk enough about, and it's embarrassing. Like we're afraid to say when we tell people, no, I don't want your services right now. We're afraid to say why, because we're not yet at that budget. There's nothing wrong with saying that, you know, and it's just, you know, again, at, you know, through business mastery, through Tony Robbins, you know, I've learned a lot about the stages of business. And so we're right now at that adolescent phase of business where we've grown consistently and we're, you know, now at that level where, you know, we close to probably do about $500,000 this year. And, but yet, it's really interesting. Solopreneurs, when I was acted more of a solopreneur and I was an independent contractor, I actually made more money personally than I do at this level, because now I have a big team. And if our income has fluctuations where it goes up and down, well, the team always gets paid.
all the obligations are always taken care of. And for whatever reason, we try something that doesn't work. We tried to outsource our sales, for example, and that was a big failure. And as a result, there was a financial cost to that. You know, we spent $8,000 testing Facebook advertising with a really, really good agency. It was a failure. And that money came from me. And so that's the kind of risk that you take when you're the business owner. And so now, you know, if I can, you have to learn what are the things that you need to pad out so that you can increase that profit margin, so you have more wiggle room to play with. So you can, because you want to keep on testing. You can't ever stop testing on stuff.
Well, how do you know when to double down on something that's good, or, you know, through testing? How do you know when to test something? How do you know when not to test something? How do you know when to add something mm-hmm. or remove something? Like, give us some, because I mean, you've had multiple businesses that you've started, six before your first, you know, real success, and now you're growing this, which is a successful yeah. company. What have you seen in that?
Yeah, so, you know, obviously when you can test the waters, you know, you can dip your toe in a little bit. When you can do that, that is really nice. Maybe it's an agency that you want to work with. Like, we'll do this with people that are considering working with us, and they're like, well, you know, yeah, you know, I'd love your, you know, in, you know, our most expensive thing we do is influencer engagement campaigns, and, you know, that can go as high as $5,000 a month. And like I said, we're pretty inexpensive in this world. And that's intentionally so. We want to be in the blue ocean. We want to serve an audience that's been underserved. But they might be looking at that and they say, well, that's a big risk for me. And I said, well, why don't we just start working on, let's do a LinkedIn makeover. You know, it's one time $3.99. We're going to make you look like an absolute rock star on LinkedIn. And that's currency that you can, that's an indicator of authority that you can use for the rest of your business. How long are you going to be in business for? Forever. Okay, well, great. Well, let's work on your LinkedIn. You can revise it from time to time, but we really need to get you up to a different level where people are going to respect you. And so let's do that, $3.99. That way you can see how we work, and, you know, and if we're doing our job well, you know, we'll make sure that, you know, they get good results from that. We invest in the relationship. They invest in the relationship. We have a successful job that we do together. And then we're like, that was good. Let's do more. And so we do a lot of that, which is, you know, our close rate right now is like for an agency, it's like, it's insane. It's better than 2/3. Most agencies, I think, close, you know, maybe 10%, 20%, because, you know, they whip out these contracts and all these terms that are just, we don't do any of that. Everything we do is a la carte. It's month to month. And then we have a lot of things where they're like, hey, why don't we just do this simple thing together and see how it goes. And, you know, we recommend things we know we're really, really good at, and we know they're going to be very happy with the results. So, yeah. So as a result, we end up closing a lot of business. We get the ball rolling. And that's another philosophy that I like from a sales perspective, of just find a way to start working together. Because a lot of times the client just needs to know, can you solve my problem? You're not going to, you know, I'm not going to take a bath on this. You're not going to steal my money. And so by just starting to work together, they get that level of comfort, and it's less risky for them. And so as a result, you get to get the ball rolling, and then you can move up into other stuff.
Yeah. I've heard it put this way, to kind of land and expand.
Like, yeah.
Get the ball rolling and do that.
You know, Bob Berg, the go-giver, if you're familiar with that philosophy, is just start doing stuff for them. Don't charge them money. Just be a giver. And we do a lot of that as well. We make connections. We make recommendations. You know, we give them advice. You know, we're on their website and we're like, hey, we noticed, you know, your copyright still says 2016, you know, stuff. We see stuff like that all the time. So we have a certain, we have a certain level of perspective. You know, when I'm hiring, you know, when I've just hired Eric, who's our director of relationships, you know, that's his job is, you know, his job is just to make a lot of connections, get people in, just give them stuff. You know, obviously, we're going to be selective, you know, if they have a budget. If they don't have a budget, then we have stuff for them as well. But if we feel like, you know, yeah, they've got a budget, you know, they're spending money on growth, then we'll absolutely make other investments.
Now, why did you guys choose Orlando?
Well, because it's fun. It's the when we were in West Michigan, which is where we launched Savings Angel, we sold our home, rented a smaller home because we were going into business startup and we didn't know if it was going to succeed or not. So we wanted to kind of de-risk a little bit. And so it took off. And we thought, well, I guess we could live about anywhere. And so everywhere we looked, we thought, well, it's still going to be really cold 8 months out of the year. And, you know, we'd like to go someplace where we can have fun on a regular basis. You know, looks like we're going to have a little bit of extra budget with the family to go and do fun things. You know, let's raise our kids. Our kids were younger at the time. At the time they were, you know, 9, 5, and 2 at the time. And so now they're much older. So for the past 10, 11 years, they've, you know, we've been able to raise them near Disney World and Universal and, you know, take them to Hogwarts and SeaWorld and the beaches. And, you know, it's a really great place to raise a family. And at the time that we bought housing, you know, we bought at the bottom of the housing market. So, you know, we timed it really, really well. I mean, we got lucky in that regards that it was a match in terms of, you know, when we eventually bought our home here. But yeah, it's been a wonderful place to live. The first summer is always like insane. It's brutal. You're like, are you kidding me, right? Then you get used to it. And, you know, now, of course, it's December and, you know, the weather couldn't be any more perfect.
Yeah, it's beautiful. What question should I ask you that I didn't ask you or totally dropped the ball on?
No, you're a very thorough interviewer, Josh, and that you know, I think that comes with the name. So
good name.
Yeah.
You've got a good name, Josh.
Yeah. you know, I think that you know, in terms of maybe how I operate personally, I think is pretty important because that's one thing I learned from the 5 a.m. miracle or the morning miracle.
Okay.
Is that we live our days with intentionality. And I noticed that, so I've got, and I think hopefully most of us, if you're a high achieving person, you're listening to this podcast, you're a high achieving person. So I learned that, you know, if you've got your short-term goals, you got your long-term goals. Your long-term goals, let's say you want to learn Spanish, you want to learn to play the piano, whatever it is. Like if you don't front load that stuff in your day, chances are it's not going to happen. And so I have found that you don't have to wake up at 5 a.m., but you do need to schedule your day so that the first hour of your day is stuff that's good for you. So, you know, for me, you know, I've been really trying to rediscover faith and really try to understand that a little bit. So I've really been trying to find good teachers in that regard. You know, I huge into personal development. So anything I can find, like that's my me time. I take my doggy Levi around the block. I listen to audiobooks on Blinkist, for example, which, you know, condenses them down to like 12-15 minutes. Listen to a lot of podcasts. I sometimes journal. I've tried meditation. I'll tell you that, you know, as a type A person, that's really hard for me. And honestly, I get done with it. You know, even if I do it for like a minute to 5 minutes, I'm like, well, that was a waste of time. I don't know what that was for. But I have learned that I like the results. I hate the process. Like I really hate the process. But like that kind of stuff. And so if you read Hal Elrod, Miracle Morning, you'll get all this. Again, I don't think 5 a.m. is critical. My schedule, generally, I really don't start cooking until 10. I actually, believe it or not, I work from 10 to 4, and I work my guts out during that 10 to 4. But before then, that's kind of my time. Like, I'll do some stuff on Slack just to make sure people have what they need. But I invest very heavily in my team, and I hire people early in the process because eventually, so where we want to be is you don't want to be a business owner. You don't want to be a business operator. You want to be a business owner. And so what that means is you need to share the opportunity with other people. Invest in your team. Create a vision. So I've got a vision for me. I've got a vision for my clients. But I also have a vision for my team. I want to make their dreams come true. And for them, you know, I want them to have an amazing work from home opportunity where they can earn a great income, they can have an impact on people's lives, and they can be rewarded for doing it, have super, super flexibility with their schedule. And so that's my vision for them. And so so what that means is at the beginning, I was working pretty consistently 12-hour days. But today, I try to keep that down to 6. Now, I'm doing stuff outside of 10 to 4. Like, I'm always, you know, answering questions on Slack. And, you know, I will schedule stuff. Like, I did some speaking the other night at a local event here. So there's things like that that will get into my schedule. But a point, like, where I schedule appointments, like, if it's sales now, I only do 10 to 4 Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. And that window keeps getting smaller and smaller and smaller. And so if you're a solopreneur, and this is actually something that's kind of interesting, and this is one thing that I struggled with, I'm like, I don't understand how I scale from here, because everybody wants to talk to me with the company. They're like, of my influence, well, I want to pay and have access to Josh. You know, that's not scalable. That can't happen very long. So when you want to work with Tony Robbins, for example, and you pay Tony Robbins $85,000 to be a part of his Platinum Partners program, how much time do you think you get with Tony Robbins? Like, how much personal time?
Oh, probably none.
You get, if you're lucky, you get 2 photos a year with him. You line up and you get snap a photo. That's it. Otherwise, you know, Tony comes in the room. He's like, all right, thank you guys for the $85,000. You know, I'm so glad to have his part of the Platinum Partners program. You know, my lieutenants, my generals, they got you. You're in good hands right now. Robin's out, right? And that's it, right? That's you know, and that's by design. He's a business owner. He's not a business operator. His name's on it, but that's what we want to get to. So we really have to train up that next generation to replace us. And so now, you know, for like day-to-day operations of like fulfilling our product to our client, I don't really do much. I don't do much of that anymore. There's still some things that I do, but again, those things I will outsource eventually as well. So I'm constantly trying to outsource what I do and eventually get to the point where I work 5 hours a week. That's the goal. That's why I'm doing this. I want to empower everybody at every level. I want to create the thing. I'm a creator. And then I want to be able to live my life pursuing the things that are in my heart. Right now, building this amazing business and serving people, that's in my heart. But I'm going to want to go and do a lot more philanthropic stuff as I continue to get older.
Let's go down this route of, you know, your philanthropy focus. Like, what kind of things tug at your heart?
I believe that God has blessed me with the ability to teach and inspire. And so so I will look for opportunities where I can work with underprivileged folks. I will look for opportunities where I can teach them abundance, and where they may have, and they may have been raised with a scarcity mindset, and that is absolutely their reality right now. And I'm not going to, you know, I'm not going to put rose-tinted glasses on. Their reality is hard, based on, you know, where they're at, what's going on in the economy, what's going on. Like, I get it. Like, you know, maybe it's a group of, you know, whether it's kids or adults, you know, that just something about what's brought them together revolves around a struggle that they're dealing with. Working with veterans, I've done a lot of work working with veterans. I'm a military veteran myself, so I love working with military veterans. And I will say that I believe that, you know, personally, I think that that's a group that, you know, where post 9/11, America has gotten very, very good at thanking a veteran. Before 9/11, wasn't really like that. The world really changed. You know, I remember, you know, Veterans Day, working through Veterans Day, and didn't, you know, I saw maybe there were some things on the news, but other than that, you know, everyone knew I served in the military. No one ever said anything like, hey, thanks for your service. I mean, it just didn't happen. So post 9/11, now that happens a lot more now. But I think, you know, veterans is one group that I can advocate for in particular, just because I have personal experience with that. So veterans tend to be very resourceful, like they're very, very self-reliant. And so it's really, really, like, it feels wonderful to be thanked you know, just speaking as a veteran. Now, listen, I was not tip of the spear. I had it pretty good. I was in Hawaii for 3 years. But when somebody says thank you, I really appreciate it. And it actually gives me a bit of pride. It makes me feel I've fallen in love with my military experience in a way that I didn't have immediately after getting out. So it actually perpetuates a lot of national pride in that veteran and saying, you know what, I do love the fact that I served, and I love the fact that in my own special way I helped, you know, preserve freedom, whatever it is. So when you thank a veteran and they say, hey, I appreciate that, thank you so much, ask them, you know, you can ask them, I could tell you exactly what they're going to say. Is there anything I can do for you? They're going to always say, no, I'm good, right? Unless there really is something that's it's got to be really pressing, they're not going to tell you. So one thing I like to do, and I'll tell you why I think veterans deserve this in just a second, is that you actually just offer something. Like, you know, I know you're in business for yourself. Can I help with connections? Connections don't cost anything, just a little bit of time. Connections can make all the difference in the world. You know this, Josh. Like, connections are like so valuable. Can I introduce you? Can I maybe give you a shout out on my social media or something like that? Tell me a little bit more about your products and services, like that kind of stuff, where it doesn't cost a whole lot, but can mean a big, big deal. Like, the person who's listening, please do this. And I'll tell you why. Veterans took their life and they essentially put it on hold, because you don't serve in the military for the money. You do it, maybe it is a good life fit. But generally, there is some level of service that goes into that. I believe in my country. I believe in, you know, keeping us safe. Somebody has to do it. I will go and I will serve. I will do that thing. I will go and sit in Afghanistan for a couple of years when it's not real fun to do that kind of thing. And in so doing, you know, maybe I'm helping in my own little way, helping reduce the risk of terrorism, for example. And again, I don't want to get too political on this stuff. All I want to do is make sure that we honor those who, for whatever reason, they chose to serve. Because even if, in my case, for example, you know, I got tinnitus from it, but other than that, like, I don't have shrapnel in my head or face. I have all my limbs. I'm very, very grateful for the service, and I'm grateful for my safety. But, you know, when I got out, I was 5 years behind everybody else. All my friends, they were already graduated college. So they're already starting their career, and I'm showing up as a freshman. And when we offer to help a veteran, we help them catch up just a little bit. So maybe they only serve 2 years, 5 years, 10 years, but if we all chip in just a little bit, we can catch them up and we can make everybody equal and whole, it's really easy to do. Same thing for, I think we really need to do that for minority business owners, women business owners. There is a systemic disadvantage. And so if everybody can just be a little bit more sympathetic or empathic, then we can wipe out the systemic disadvantage that's present.
Wow. Josh, thanks for sharing this with me. This is really cool. I've never looked at it that way.
Yeah.
That's really awesome.
And I think that, you know, why, you know, for example, like, I think every business owner should find ways to just do stuff pro bono. Like, you know, why, you know, we, you know, had some success with Savings Angel. Just teach along the way. Don't worry about getting paid for it. Don't worry about, like, you know, they need to promote me before I do this. Just, you'll get there. Just keep serving. You know, if the first thing you do when you wake up in the morning is ask, who am I going to sell to today? Look, I've been there. I know what it's like to have financial pressure. It sucks. But if you can shift that just a little bit, instead of saying, who could I sell to today? And instead saying, you know, who could I serve today? I know that sounds very difficult for some people who are listening to me say that, but I'm telling you that it will completely change your life. And it'll change your life because you won't be stressed out all the time. You'll know that you're here to serve. You'll know that you're here to bring value. And people will sense that. And they'll sense, they won't smell sales on your breath all the time. They'll sense, this is a legit guy. This is, you know, she is looking out for my well-being. I don't even know what she offers, but I want a part of that. That's what people will sense from you, and you'll find that your business just naturally grows. Opportunities just naturally happen.
That's so good. So good. Josh, people who are listening in, where could they find you, learn more about you, and connect with you?
Yeah, so if you will do this, if you go to Up My Influence, I'm going to give you a little roundabout way here. Here's how you get access to me. Normally, this would go to Eric and everybody else on the team. So if you go to upmyinfluence.com/schedule, and you'll see that there's a place where you can schedule time with me, and it says invitation only. And I seriously, like my assistant goes and she makes sure that anybody who sneaks in there, just to try to protect my time as much as possible. But if you say that you heard this podcast interview, you mentioned that in the, you know, what can we do, you know, kind of that form field, then Alisa will make sure that you can schedule that time with me. And what I'd love to do is I'd love to take some time, learn about your business, see if there's anyone that I can make some immediate referrals to. Love to review your website, your social media, that sort of thing, give you some actionable advice. And that would be my honor to be able to do that. But you have to mention this particular podcast.
Or you'll get the gatekeeper.
You will get the gatekeeper. Alisa will. She'll send you off to Eric. Is wonderful. Very good at what he does.
We love Eric.
Yes, yeah. But, you know, you have right now, you've been listening to this interview for over 50 minutes. So you have the relationship with me. You haven't listened to 50 minutes of Eric yet. So I'd be happy to continue the relationship on that call. We'll do that over Zoom.
Awesome, awesome, awesome. Ladies and gentlemen in Orlando and elsewhere listening into this show, it's been a really fun conversation with Josh Elledge, who started Savings Angel. Up My Influence was known as the Love Doctor, and now is
for a brief amount of time in my own mind.
And now is impacting the world and helping others build credibility and authority so that they can then create a bigger impact in their business. Yeah. He's influencing the influencers so they could do their job better. So I hope this was helpful. You could go into the show notes and click on the links to connect with him, to learn more about him. And guys, we hope you've enjoyed this. Please like, comment, and share this to engage with Josh. You probably see this on LinkedIn and other places. So good place to make connections and to learn more about each other.
Yeah, if you share this episode on social media and you tag me on it, I'm going to retweet it, especially on the Twitter. So that's easy. That's like free advertising right there. And it's a win-win-win for everybody.
Very cool. Very cool. So ladies and gentlemen, thanks for listening in. We will talk with you all on the next episode. We'll see you, everyone. Bye, Josh.
See you.
Thank you for listening in on today's episode. If you would like to be a guest on the show or start up a conversation with me, Josh, your host, send me an email to josh@orlandoentrepreneurs.org. You can also find out more information on Orlando's entrepreneurial ecosystem, discover resources to help you start and grow your business, and subscribe to future shows by visiting www.orlandoentrepreneurs.org.